Chapter 1 First 18 Decades analyze the Hermetic system of natal astrology is different from the systems that today find favor with the vast majority of astrologers only, in that it embraces additional features. It departs from prevalent methods seldom, and then only where experience, based on thousands of charts analyzed by the Church of Light Research Department, proves those methods in error. But in addition to the factors commonly employed by the most successful astrologers, it contains others which promote greater precision, and which give the science far greater practical utility. As lending itself to precision, instead of rules so general in application as to be vague, a definite and specific statement is presented for each position, aspect and relation found in the chart. Natal astrology is not divination, although a wide variety of systems may be devised of using astrology as a divinatory agent, any one of which in the hands of an expert will yield good results. Instead, it is the actual measurement of those thought elements within a certain person, and a mapping of their relations to each other, which express as his character, and the plotting of when these factors of his character will be stimulated into a given activity, and will thus tend to attract events of a specific type. A person receiving a birth chart should be told what it represents. A birth chart is an accurate map of those thought components within the astral body, which constitute the character with which the individual was born. In its ascent through innumerable lower forms of life, the soul had experiences of various kinds. The awareness and emotions accompanying these experiences built thought elements into the high velocity, or stellar, body. Through other experiences, these thought elements became organized as stellar cells, and these in turn into dynamic stellar structures. The most powerful of these thought structures in the astral body are mapped by the planets in the birth chart, and their outstanding relations to other dynamic thought structures are mapped by the aspects in the birth chart. Thoughts, in the sense we here use the term, embrace every form of consciousness, and include the sensations felt by even the lowest forms of life. All life forms react to environment through an awareness, which builds mental elements into their finer forms. And a birth chart is a map of an individual's character, that is, of the thought organizations of his finer body. These thought groups and the way they are organized thus indicate the natural aptitudes with which the individual was born, and also, because the thought cells, or stellar cells, work from the inner plane to demonstrate the kind of events they desire, the type of events that will come into the life, unless some effort is made to change the character, that is, to change the thought combinations in the finer form. When the individual receiving a reading understands this, he will no longer consider his birth chart as an instrument of fatality. Instead, he will perceive that it shows him what changes in his character he must make to improve his destiny, and that his destiny can thus be improved. In connection with each department of life should be shown what will be attracted, and why, if nothing special is done about it. The houses of a birth chart map the compartments in the astral body, which contain the thought cells, and thought structures relating to each of the 12 departments of life. The planet in a house, or ruling it by sign, maps the most active thought structures in the astral body, which have an influence upon the department of life so designated. The thought elements mapped by a planet are of the type indicated by that planet. This determines the type of activity they possess: aggressive, social, domestic, abundance, poverty, etc. These thought elements are combined with the thought elements mapped by other planets to form the stellar cells of which the astral body is composed. That is, even as all living physical matter is composed of protoplasm, which is a combination of chemical elements, so is the high-velocity astral body composed of psychoplasm formed of thought elements in various kinds of combinations. The physical body is built of cells of protoplasm and their secretions, and the astral body, wherein resides the character, is built of thought cells, or stellar cells, as they also are called. These stellar cells are not all alike, but are composed of thought elements of various kinds and in different proportions. They, in turn, enter into the formation of stellar structures, just as the physical cells are organized into the bony structure, the muscular structure, the nervous structure, etc., of the physical body. The manner in which the elements have combined to produce thought cells and stellar structures in the astral body is mapped in the birth chart by the aspects between the planets, which rule the different types of thought elements. An aspect, furthermore, indicates that a line has been built across the astral body, which has the function of picking up, radio fashion, the vibratory energies radiated by the two planets involved in the aspect. That is, it performs the function of a stellar aerial, by which new energy reaches the thought cells in the astral body, and gives them the power to do work from the high-velocity plane where they reside. The planet in, or otherwise ruling, a house in a birth chart thus indicates by its nature the kind of thought elements that are dominant in relation to a certain department of life such as health, finances, marriage, honor, etc., and by its aspects to other planets indicates how these thought elements have combined with other thought elements, and the amount of harmony or discord they tend to express. From the volume and type of energy these thought elements express, together with their harmonious or discordant relations to other departments of life, as indicated by the aspects, which map both stellar aerials and the way the thought elements at either end of the aerial have combined, can be estimated both the natural aptitudes of the individual in reference to the things thus designated, and whether, and to what extent, he will attract fortune or misfortune in reference to this department of life. Whatever comes to him, of course, is the result of his own character, the aptitudes and normal activities, of which are mapped in the birth chart. Every complete reading of a birth chart, therefore, should define the aptitudes and indicate what, unless special steps are taken to alter the destiny, may be expected in each of the 12 departments of the individual's life. It should be shown what can be done about changing the destiny of each department of life, of what benefit is it to an individual to understand what a birth chart is, and what kind of fortune he may expect in each of the 12 departments of life, unless he also knows what can be done to make his destiny more satisfactory. The value of understanding what a birth chart is, and what normally may be expected from its positions thoroughly set forth in this course, is that this also points the way to what can be done, in reference to each department of life, to attract events and conditions more to the liking. That is, if both the abilities and the fortune or misfortune attracted in reference to business, money, marriage, honor, friends, etc., are due to organizations and activities of thought energies within the astral form, by changing these organizations and activities the abilities and fortune both will be altered. So far as health is concerned, Course 16 gives the more common birth chart indications, and also the more common progressed indications, of 160 different diseases, and what should be done to prevent these birth predispositions from developing diseases. In the reference book, Body Disease and Its Stellar Treatment 1, the statistical analysis of 700 birth charts progressed to the time of one of seven common diseases is presented, together with a detailed explanation of the proper precautionary measures. In the reference book, How to Select a Vocation 1, there is statistical analysis of 3,000 birth charts and 30 vocations, which is presented in such a way as completely to cover the subject of astrological vocational selection. And in the reference book, When and What Events Will Happen 1, There is the statistical analysis of 2000 charts progressed to the time of events, and explanation of the precautionary actions that must be taken to make each type of event analyzed more fortunate. Course 9 goes into the details of how to change, in the most beneficial manner, the thought cell composition and the desires of the thought cells within the astral body. And the present course treats natal astrology very thoroughly from the standpoint of the best thing to be done in relation to each position of the birth chart and each progressed aspect. I believe the skill of an astrologer and his real worth should be measured by his ability to instruct his client on the best possible method of making those changes in himself and his environment that will enable him, in each of the 12 departments of his life, to have a far better destiny than his birth chart otherwise indicates, and I believe that such valuable information should form an essential part of every complete birth chart reading. The person receiving a reading should be told what a progressed aspect represents. A progressed aspect may be inevitable in the heavens, like rain or snow, heat or cold, wind or calm, but its effect on the individual is determined by the way he handles it. It means that a temporary stellar aerial is built across his astral body for the duration of the aspect, which picks up the energies of both planets involved, and picks them up either harmoniously or loaded with static, according to the nature of the aspect. It is so much additional energy of a given kind, reaching the thought cells in a certain compartment of the astral body, and causing them to become unusually active. It is the unusual inner plane activities of these thought cells, which attract into the life at that time the indicated events. The person receiving a reading should be told what events each progressed aspect during the period covered may be expected to bring, if nothing special is done about it. That is, he should, in connection with each progressed aspect, be informed as to what thoughts, impulses and tendencies are stimulated in his unconscious mind, how they are stimulated, and what events may be expected to come into the life from the inner plane work of these unusually active thought cells. The person receiving a reading should be told, in connection with each progressed aspect during the period covered, the very best method of causing the energies to attract, not what they otherwise would, but what he wants them to attract. In predicting events, for instance, is indicated what normally may be expected from a progressed aspect to each planet, what to do under a progressed affliction to each planet, and what to do under a favorable progressed aspect to each planet. And in this section of the course is indicated how rallying forces, the environment, mental antidotes, and conversion may advantageously be employed. Course 9 goes further into the details of properly directing thought energies to change beneficially the factors mapped in the birth chart or stimulated by progressed aspects. The person receiving a reading should be given a chart correctly erected for the time of day, as well as for the year, month, day, and place of birth. Astrology has become so interwoven in the public mind with fortune-telling that great effort is needed to set people aright concerning the difference. All too often broadside mass readings and psychic readings are called astrological. But a correctly erected birth chart for the time of day of birth will indicate that the factors for a personal reading have, at least, been calculated. Without the time of day of birth, the house positions of the chart cannot be known, and unless the house positions of the chart are known, the compartment of the astral body, whose thought cells receive unusual amounts of energy, cannot be determined. It is from the compartments of the astral body receiving energy of a special type and volume that the department of life affected must be ascertained. It is true that astrology can be used as a divinatory instrument. It is probably the most valuable of all divinatory instruments, and certainly is more widely used as a divinatory instrument than any other. Hoary astrology, for instance, is the use of astrology, as an instrument of divination, and much of the advice appearing in current astrological literature is based upon the divinatory use of astrology. Nor is there here any intention of disparaging divination by astrology, by the tarot cards, by numbers, or by other well-tested methods. A wide variety of systems may be devised, and have been devised, of using astrology as a divinatory agent, any one of which in the hands of an expert will yield good results. But it cannot be emphasized often enough that natal astrology is something quite different, in that it maps actual thought organizations that comprise the character, and plots when these thought organizations will receive additional energy of a given kind from the planets in such a manner as to cause them to work from their high-velocity plane to attract events of a corresponding nature into the life. I am here presenting views as to what should be included in every complete reading of a birth chart, quite well aware that as yet only a small section of public has been educated to an appreciation of either the work involved in such a thorough reading, of its tremendous value to the person possessing such a complete reading. I well realize that the astrologer cannot do the work here outlined for a dollar. Nor can the professional astrologer afford to give the detailed and constant study to a birth chart that an individual is warranted in giving to his own. To his own chart any person will be amply repaid to give a great amount of time and attention, for it can be used as a road map to guide the course of his life into channels of success he never could reach without its aid. In no other way can an individual gain so much from every department of his life as he can through the intelligent use of such a stellar map of birth. What a complete astrological reading should include in a matter that, through placing reliance on it, may change the whole course of life and destiny. Cheap work, through proving unreliable, may prove terribly expensive. And if it is not of a character that warrants reliance being placed on it, it has no value. It, therefore, is my conviction that natal astrology will never be esteemed as highly as it merits until every complete reading contains these factors. 1. The person receiving the reading should be told just what the birth chart represents. 2. He should be told, in connection with each department of life, what will be attracted, and why, if nothing special is done about it. 3. He should be informed as to the best methods to follow to change the destiny of each department of life in the desired direction. 4. He should be told what a progressed aspect represents. 5. He should be told what events each progressed aspect during the period covered may be expected to attract, if nothing special is done about it. 6. In connection with each progressed aspect during the period covered, he should be told the very best method of causing the energies then present to attract, not what they otherwise would, but what he desires. 7. To show that the basis for such information is at hand, he should be given an accurately erected chart for the time of day of birth. Aries first decanate. To picture the possibilities of the first decanates of the zodiac, the masters of old traced in the sky a starry triangle. This constellation triangulum symbolizes the divine fire that those born under the first decanate of Aries have the capacity to inhale. When living in their highest, they are true leaders in thought, for the triangle, ever used as a symbol of flame, is also used as a symbol of mind. And again, by its three sides united into one figure, it represents the union of body, mind, and spirit, thus teaching the importance of cooperation. The pioneer spirit of Aries is expressed in this decanate in all its fiery fullness. Zeal and enthusiasm mark the progress of its children. The Aries decanate of Aries, sub-ruled by the aggressive lord of war, ever seeks new worlds to conquer. And when the thoughts are permitted to soar and trammed upward, even as the triangle points to heaven, those born under this influence become the harbingers of better things. But when the lower marital power gains sway, they become the avenging agents of death and destruction. Dr. J. M. Peebles, the great pioneer of spiritualism, had this as his spiritual polarity, having been born when the sun was in this decanate. Emperor Paul of Russia had this portion of the zodiac for mental polarity, the moon being there when he was born. And Proclus, the great Greek Neoplatonic philosopher, who scaled the height of occult initiation, and so impressed his thoughts upon the times in which he lived, was born with the Mars decanate of Aries ascending, this being his physical polarity. It is the decanate of activity. Aries' second decanate. The second decanate of Aries is pictured in the sky by Eridanus, the river of life flowing from the never-failing fountain of perpetual youth. Here we find the severity of Mars tempered by the magnanimity of the Sun, which has sub-rulership over this decanate. It is the Leo section of Aries. And as Leo is natural ruler of the house of love, so the water, symbol of the emotions, bespeaks the affectional influence. Only through the affections, only in the sacred precincts of love, does man quaff the coveted elixir that imparts eternal life. So those born under this section of the sky may well seek this most hallowed source of power. They become rulers of men through their inherent power, to sway the minds of others. They are born to lead rather than to serve, for this sub-influence of Leo lends a persistent ambition for power. The heart is somewhat joined to the head, and the more this union is cultivated the better, for the greatest lever for attainment obtainable by the natives of this decanate is a noble affection. Bismarck, who pioneered in statesmanship, had his individuality in this portion of the zodiac, the sun being there at his birth. Leplongeon, who pioneered in archaeology, deciphering Mayan inscriptions, and writing a work on Atlantis, had his mentality here, the moon being in this decanate at his nativity. And Annie Besant, leader of the Theosophical Society and economic pioneer, had her personality in this decanate, it being on the ascendant when she was born. It is the decanate of exaltation. Aries' third decanate. Perseus, with the wings of thought on his feet, the helmet of courage on his head, armed with the sword of righteousness, protected by the shield of beneficence, and holding the blood-dripping head of Medusa in one hand, pictures the third decanate of Aries. The sub-rulership of Jupiter diverts the aggressive energies somewhat into religious and philosophical channels. Consequently, this Sagittarius division of Aries has vast spiritual possibilities, when its natives espouse some progressive line of thought, or use their restless never-failing energy in protection of the weak. Perseus gained renown through his daring exploits in relieving oppression. And even as he severed the head of the Gorgon Medusa, which turned to stone all who gazed upon it, so the people of this decanate have the power to destroy the crystallizing influence of licentiousness, and like the David version of the same tradition, cut off the head of the Goliath of selfish greed. They may become the valiant heroes, who wage a successful fight against the sordid conditions that oppress civilized life. In the philosophical field of endeavor they find a useful work in releasing Andromeda, the human soul, which all too often is found chained to the rock of materialism, to be devoured by lust and envy. Of those born with the sun in this decanate I may mention the pioneer theosophist, Wynne. Q. Judge. As expressing the mentality in this section of the heavens, George Sand, world's greatest authorless and spiritualizer of common sights, is a fitting example. And Dr. Rajendra Lal, whose antiquarian and research work are known far beyond his native country, India, has his personality polarized in this decanate, which was on the ascendant at his birth. It is the decanate of propaganda. Taurus first decanate. The masters of olden times in tracing symbolic pictures in the sky, to convey to later generations their conception of the influence of the various sections of the heavens, sometimes pictured the highest attainment and sometimes pictured the greatest obstacle to progress. In Lapas the Hare they symbolize the thought that timidity is the greatest bar to advancement of those born under the first decanate of Taurus. Being the first decanate of the sign naturally ruling the house of money, there is often a tendency to devote too much energy to the acquisition of wealth. And as this decanate is particularly mediumistic, those born under it easily acquire magical powers. Hence the various traditions regarding it as a place of black magic. Yet its children become adepts at white magic just as easily if they but overcome the lust for material things. It is only when they are blinded by physical aims that the place of the soul's exaltation becomes an adverse symbol. Those born here have great natural healing power and ability to crystallize conditions to their desires by the power of the imagination to mold astral substance. Ulysses S. Grant, whose fixity of purpose was his most remarkable trait, was born with his individuality polarized in this decanate, the sun being here. G.R.S. Meade, who edited the Theosophical Review, and did an immense amount of laborious work to enlighten students, had his mentality in this decanate, being the place of the moon in his chart. And Jerome Cardan, who became famous as a mathematician and astrologer, had this decanate rising at his birth. It is the decanate of determination. Taurus second decanate. In the second decanate of Taurus, the fixity of purpose is given the analytical trend through the sub-influence being that of Virgo. Therefore, some condition in the environment is attacked and made the center upon which the physical and mental forces are focused. The result is a conflict. And this conflict may be to attain fame through literary or artistic production, to attain financial supremacy through business methods, or to rise in the field of science or politics. Thus it brings a combat for supremacy. This thought is pictured by Orion, the most successful of all hunters, who attacked and slew the mighty bull. The bull represents material pleasures and physical limitations, over which it is possible for those born under this decanate to rise supreme. They have at their command an unusual supply of electromagnetism, and can mentally attack with a force as great as the huge club wielded by the mighty arm of Orion. Thus they cause obstacles to crumble. Thomas H. Huxley, whose work as a scientist was so painstaking and brought him so much opposition, was born with the sun in this decanate. The R.T. Hon Joseph Chamberlain, whose political life was spent in a struggle to gain greater freedom for the people, had his mentality here. And another, who strove with armies, George Washington, founder of the U.S. of America, was born with his personality in this section of Taurus. It is the decanate of struggle. Taurus third decanate. The third decanate of Taurus shows the reflective influence of Saturn, its sub-ruler. And even as the key phrase of Capricorn as I use, so those born under this decanate have the ability to use physical means to attain spiritual ends. The decanate is pictured in the sky by Auriga, the charioteer, who with one hand guides the chariot of his soul, and with the other protects and ministers unto the weak and needy. Auriga pictures the one who has triumphed over his environment and physical limitations and attained adeptship. Those born under this decanate have an aptitude for true spiritual attainment. And while the progress usually is not swift, yet, once undertaken, it becomes a sure and steady climb with seldom setbacks. What they receive, however, largely depends upon the use they make of the power they already possess in ministering unto the ills of others. Elizabeth D. Benjamin, who labored so successfully as a teacher of Brotherhood of Light classes for 23 years, and was one of the three founders of the Church of Light, was born with her individuality in this decanate. Fred H. Skinner, who labored successfully as a teacher of Brotherhood of Light classes for 21 years, and was one of the three founders of the Church of Light, was born with his mentality in this section of the heavens. And Immanuel Kant, whose works on transcendental philosophy have not been surpassed, was born with his personality here. It is the decanate of mastership. Gemini first decanate. By means of a bear dash Ursa Minor, whose restless activity and power suggest that of a mind, the ancients depicted the Mercury decanate of Gemini. And because the unconscious mind is not so obvious as the objective mind, this bear is small. So too, travels about the sky backward. Thus must one direct his attention contrary to the trend of objective life, to hear the voice of the silence. Perhaps unconsciously, yet nonetheless effectively, those born in the Gemini a third of Gemini tend to rely upon intuition. Their natural field of endeavor is the mental plane. They see, not merely the details of a problem, but view it completely, perceiving the proper relation of each part to the whole. And if they are not carried away by the restless desire to undertake too many things, they may become intellectual giants. For they assimilate all they contact and their deductions rise spontaneously from the soul. A life-eerie Dante, who intuitively grasped so many cosmic truths and portrayed them in his Inferno, was born when the sun passed through this decanate. George Bernard Shaw, who comprehends in their entirety so many of the present-day world problems, and presents them in his lucid literary style, was born when the moon was here. And Richard Wagner, the composer, who saw and felt the great truths of nature and expressed them so adequately in music, was born when this decanate was on the ascendant. It is the decanate of intuition. Gemini's second decanate. The second decanate of Gemini is pictured in the sky by a large dog - Canis Major. This noble-looking beast is the emblem of faithfulness, and through its adoration for its master also represents the worshipping and serving of deity, for to the dog his master is God. Therefore, we find those born under the second decanate of Gemini often possess a singular and admirable faithfulness, either to their human companions, or to some high ideal. They have much veneration, and seek to obey the voice of their conscience implicitly. This Venus decanate also relates to twin souls. So there is greater likelihood of those born here finding a congenial mate than is the case with most. And to make the best of life they must espouse some principle or progressive cause, and work to get it generally acknowledged and accepted. Robert Schumann, the musical critic and composer, who was so faithful to his ideal of musical interpretation, was born with his individuality polarized in this decanate. Miss Florence Cook, whose faithfulness to the cause of spiritualism led her to become the medium through whom Katie King manifested to Sir Gwyn Crooks, had her mentality pictured by this section of the sky. And when Jennings Bryan, whose faithfulness to his political and religious convictions is the best known feature of his career, was born with his personality in this part of Gemini. It is the decanate of fidelity. Gemini a third decanate. A huge bear Ursa Major traveling about the pole star in a forward direction depicts among the constellations the Aquarius decanate of Gemini. The bear, whose restless activity and omnivorous nature is typical of mentality, in this case moves as does the objective mind, in the direction of events. And it is huge in size to indicate the immense power that may be exercised by thought. This is the scientific decanate of the sign of thought. Those born under it are capable of accomplishing great things through the exercise of their minds. They tend chiefly to rely upon reason, therefore, should not only train their minds, which is readily accomplished, but should also cultivate idealism and religion. Otherwise their efforts crystallize and become self-centered. Nero, the Roman emperor, who had wonderful talent, but could burn Rome for his own amusement. So self-centered had he become, had the sun in this section of the heavens at his birth. On the other hand, as indicating the better qualities of this deaconate, Nicholas Culpeper, author of The Herbal and by his friends said to be the best physician that ever lived, had his moon here. And Jay Gould, whose manipulation of railroad securities wrecked so many others and made for himself such a huge fortune, had his personality located in this last deaconate of Gemini. It is the deaconate of reason. Cancer first deaconate. The first deaconate of Cancer is depicted in the sky by a little yapping cur-canis minor, a mongrel without courage or loyalty. By it the ancient masters sought to convey the thought that those born under this section of the sky are particularly susceptible to domestic intrigue. They have strong emotions, and may easily be carried away by them. Consequently, they should put forth a persistent effort to cultivate the qualities of faithfulness and poise. Through the activity of the emotional nature, and their sensitiveness to all that affects life, they are often capable of remarkable poetic and dramatic expression. Unknown to themselves, they are the mediums through which entities on the inner planes manifest. And because they are such perfect mediums, they sometimes betray the trust placed in them, for they tend to yield to the temporarily strongest influence. They should learn to be positive and firm. Louis XII of France, who divorced his virtuous and ill-favored queen, Joan, to marry Anne of Brittany, by whom he was dominated, was born with the sun in this deaconate. Nell Gwynn, actress and favorite of Charles II, had her moon in this place. And Lord Byron, the poet, whose love affairs were none too conventional, was born with this deaconate on the ascendant. It is the deaconate of moods. Cancer second deaconate. Hydra the water serpent commences as the middle decan of Cancer, and extends through the sky all the distance from this home constellation to Scorpio, the constellation of death. Representing the Scorpio, or sex, deaconate of the domestic sign, those born under it possess much resource and energy, as well as being strongly emotional. The serpent is the symbol of creative energy, and the water, in which it dwells, is the symbol of the strong emotions displayed by these people. So the traditional struggle of Hercules with this monster is not without significance, for it represents the struggle with sensual desires, as well as a struggle to overcome the limitations imposed by death. Thus we find that those born here have a natural aptitude for communion with those who have passed to the spirit side of life. And if they do not fall into the destructive forms of mediumship, but instead retain at all times full control of their bodies and minds, they are led, impressed, and guided from the spirit side of life in all their worthy undertakings. W.T. Stead, who established the Bureau for Spirit Communication, and did so much for the spread of spiritualism, was born with his individuality here. Dr. Luke D. Broughton, author of the well-known Elements of Astrology, had his mentality in this deaconate. And Sarah M. Grimk, the fine seeress, and author of Esoteric Lessons, who contributed valuable work in behalf of spiritual enlightenment, had her personality in this section of the sky. It is the deaconate of revelation. Cancer third deaconate. Argo, the constellated ship, that gave foundation for the story both of Noah's Ark and that of the adventurous Argonautic expedition, pictures the third deaconate of Cancer. There will be stormy seas in the lives of those born here, but a tranquil mind will prove an adequate bark to carry them to the shores of safety. They are restless and somewhat discontented. While loving domestic life, yet they are also eager to learn what is just below the horizon. Their curiosity, however, becomes an asset and leads them into fields that are all too little known. They are great lovers of Mother Nature, take keen delight in spying out her secrets, and in this kind of work find their greatest natural aptitude. The celebrated Finnish painter, Albert Edelfelt, had the son in this decanate at his birth. Lorenzo Niles Fowler, whose investigations in another department of nature's laboratory, that of phrenology, has made him noted, had his moon here at birth. And Bulwer Lytton, who delved deeply into the occult - for among his many novels we find two depicting respectively the lives of a white and a black magician, Zanoni, and A Strange Story, was born with his ascendant in this part of the heavens. It is the decanate of research. Leo First Decanate. The first decanate of Leo is pictured among the constellations by Crater of Furnace, or Cup of Fire. In this manner did the ancient masters of starry lore portray the fiery love nature of those born under this section of the sky. Their most notable trait is the desire and ability to rule others. And unless this tendency is restrained, there is an inclination to dominate. Yet always there is a powerful love nature. And as love is at the foundation of all achievement, if this love energy can be directed into proper channels, it leads on to success. But due to its strength, there is danger of turning to one extreme or the other, either permitting pleasure to dominate the life, or in rebellion at the tendency toward excess to become the avowed ascetic. As neither extreme permits a proper expression of the fine qualities of this decanate, the watchword should be moderation. Hiram Butler, author of Solar Biology, who founded and ruled a colony of esoteric students, whose efforts largely revolve around sex repression, was born with the sun here. Anna B. Kingsford, who wrote The Perfect Way, Clothed with the Sun, and other works of an occult character, and whose relationship with a prominent organization was severed because of her own dominant views and teachings, was born with the moon in this decanate. And Adelina Patti, the prima donna, who dominated the multitude through the beauty and power of her voice, was born with this part of Leo as her ascendant. It is the decanate of rulership. Leo Second Decanate. In the second, or Jupiter, decanate of Leo, the inherent quality of dominant control characteristic of Leo is modified by the subinfluence of the sign of the higher mind, Sagittarius. The philosophical and religious elements are more in evidence, and those born here readily recognize the prevalent weaknesses both in current politics and in current religion. And what is more important, they have the courage of their convictions and the power to gain followers for their own progressive ideas. To picture the ruthless onslaughts with which these people attack both persons and policies that seek to ravage society. Centaurus, a being having the lower parts of a horse and the upper parts of a man, is represented among the constellations as impaling on the end of his spear the wolf that pictures the last decanate of Libra. This wolf symbolizes those who use the brilliancy of their intellects to suppress truth and to foist ignorance and superstition upon society, that they may profit by its exploitation. As those born in this middle decanate of Leo have the power to convince and lead others, it behooves them to put forth every effort to gain the truth, and to take great care that they do not disseminate erroneous notions. Ivladim H. P. Blavatsky, founder of the Theosophical Society, was born with her individuality here. Mr. J. Malcolm Mitchell, secretary of the Men's League for Women's Suffrage, had his moon in this decanate. And Martin Luther, founder of the Protestant religion, was born with his personality polarized to this section of the sky. It is the decanate of Reformation. Leo Third Decanate. Corvus, the raven, is the constellation picturing the tendencies of people born under the third decanate of Leo. This raven is pictured with wings outspread as if in readiness to fly aloft, but with its feet firmly gripping the back of Hydra, the water serpent. This symbolizes the emotions that are associated with creative energy, for the raven appears to be making a meal from the flesh of the serpent. In this last portion of Leo we have the love of power and rulership combined with the quality of leadership bestowed by Aries. As a consequence, those born under this section of the sky are determined to rise in life regardless of obstacles. And when this tendency is carried to extremes, they will sacrifice their associates, their family, and even integrity itself, in order to increase their power. But when their ideals are thoroughly for the wealth of humanity rather than for mere personal aggrandizement, they become of immense service to society through their natural gift of being able to handle others and use them to advantage. Napoleon I, who attempted to conquer the world by arms, was born with a son in this decanate. Dr. Zamenhof, who invented a language, Esperanto, which was to supersede all other languages in the world, had his moon in this section of the heavens. And Alan Leo, who attempted to give to astrology a worldwide recognition and power, was born with his ascendant here. It is the decanate of ambition. Virgo first decanate. In the Mercury decanate of Virgo we find the assimilative quality exercised to the most pronounced degree. The mind of those born here are usually restless and active, a tendency pictured among the constellations by Boots the Bear Driver, who follows the Great Bear, symbol of the objective mind, about the heavens with an appraised sickle, urging him on. And to convey the idea that man's thoughts, when carefully tended, yield a most precious fruitage, Boots is traditionally associated with the vine of the grape, for he is also a husbandman. So those who are native of this section of the zodiac press, with great dexterity, the wine from all life's varied experiences. It then becomes a coveted elixir, which stimulates them to still greater accomplishment. This is the harvest decanate, and these people readily sift their grain from the chaff, and use it practically for sustenance. Maurice Maeterlinck, so successful in literature, was born with his individuality in this decanate. Alexander the Great, whose military achievements have been unsurpassed, was born with the moon in this part of the heavens. And Henry Cornelius Agrippa, who attained success and renown in the practice of ceremonial magic, was born with his ascendant here. It is the decanate of achievement. Virgo second decanate. The Saturn decanate of Virgo is pictured among the constellations by Hercules the hero who, among other things, performed 12 superhuman labors. One foot crushes the head of the cyclic dragon, while his outstretched hand grasps the apples of Hesperides. This depicts the tendency of those born under this section of the sky to undertake and accomplish, by unremitting toil, the performance of gigantic tasks. They also have an exceptional variety of experiences, both with the so-called good and the so-called. Thus are their lives filled with events. Here we find the assimilative powers of the mind, conferred by Virgo, to be given a diplomatic trend, and often there is a great desire for worldly fame and honor. The temptations that come to these people are great. But if they guard against the allurements of the flesh that sooner or later come into their lives, they can rise to great heights through their unusual powers of discernment and comparison. Mabel Collins, who wrote Light on the Path and other occult works, and whose life has been varied in experience, was born with the sun in this decanate. Camille Flammarion, the great French astronomer, who likewise is an authority on psychic research and a wide variety of other matters, had the moon here at birth. And Chopin, the great composer, whose affair of the heart ended so disastrously, had this part of the heavens on the ascendant at his birth. It is the decanate of experience. Virgo third decanate. The last decanate of the northern signs is pictured by a crown of 12 iron spikes. This Venus decanate of the mental sign Virgo is the point from which the sun passes into the winter section of the zodiac. And so the serpent, picturing the first decanate of Libra, is represented with his fangs just before Corona Borealis, the northern crown, as if to strike. Virgo, as a whole, corresponds to the house of work. So this last decanate seems particularly given to working in behalf of others. People born here find their greatest possibilities in the realm of service. When they can lose sight of the reward and labor enthusiastically for some noble cause, they live to their utmost. Even though the laborer is worthy of his hire, yet those born under this influence are often called upon to give up the things they would prefer to do for the sake of duty. Though the material reward is a crown of thorns, yet the gain in character and soul power always more than repays for all sacrifice. Henrik Daith, who labored so steadfastly in the cause of modern astrology, was born with his individuality here. Leo Tolstoy, who though born of nobility, lived so simply and made so many sacrifices in the cause of peace and purity, had his mentality in this decanate. And Swami Triganaitetti, the Vedanta's teacher who was blown to pieces in his temple in San Francisco by a fanatic, while he was faithfully serving his religion, had his personality polarized in this place. It is the decanate of renunciation. Note with a few exceptions, so that the student may have easy access to the chart cited, and thus study the other factors contributing to character and accomplishment, I have used as examples persons whose charts may be found in 1001 Notable Nativities. 1. See Astrology 30 Years Research.